The time is 1:33. We are here in Belt's Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building in the beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. This meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will come to order. Today is Wednesday, March 8th, 2023. Members present are Senator Merrick, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Bishop is attending to state business elsewhere. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize and welcome Ms. Juliana Singh as our recording secretary today and our LAO moderator, Doug Bridges. Today we have two bills on the agenda, Senate Bill 74, Physical Therapy Licensure Compact, and Senate Bill 75, Audiology and Speech Language Interstate Compact. Welcome, everyone, to Senate Labor and Commerce. First up, we have Senate Bill 74. Here to present the bill, we have the bill sponsor, Senator David Wilson, and his staff, Jasmine Martin. Folks, would you please join us at the table? Please state your names and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and committee members of Labor and Commerce. My name is Senator David Wilson, Senator for the Great District N. N as in normal and Nancy.
Thank you.
And Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. Thank you.
Would you prefer that we ask questions throughout your presentation or wait till the end?
Chair, I think with the committee, will, if questions can wait till during the after the invited testimony, I think that might make it a little things easier, as some of our invited testifiers can probably drill down to a little bit more of some of the specifics and the questions that I know that I have when we first started going through this bill, and that might be more helpful and beneficial, as they probably can answer a little bit more to the specifics of their each profession. So I think if that's okay, I'm part of the will of the committee.
Very well.
Unless there's a clarifying question, because sometimes I may not pronounce things or make sure we state things and things go through. But Chair Bjorkman, again, this is Senator David Wilson for the record. Myself and Ms. Martin will be presenting two pieces of legislation to the committee today that are very similar in nature, and we'll try to be as more concise as possible, and that's why we're hearing these two bills together, because one interstate compact was actually based upon another interstate compact, and so they're very similar in language, but do have some small slight differences. Today, you're going to hear those two pieces of legislation, our Senate Bill 74, an act establishing an interstate physical therapy compact. Also, sometimes used for abbreviations, maybe called the PT compact, but we'll try not to use as many abbreviations and acronyms as possible. And the other one is Senate Bill 75, the act establishing the audiologists and speech pathologists, speech language pathologists interstate compact. Distributed to both of your offices. Was the binder on these two bills, and we'll just quickly run through some of the items in this bill. The first section of the binder contains information relevant to both pieces of legislation, basically giving an overview of what a state intercompact is, some interstate fact sheets, and some items from the Department of Defense DOD talking points. The second section contains information on Senate Bill 74, and the third contains information on Senate Bill 75. This presentation, again, if the will of the committee, will follow the format of the binders. First, we'll do an overview of both pieces of legislation, and then hear from Daniel Lodgen, the director on the National Center of Interstate Compacts, who's with the Council of State Governments, also known as CSG. And then you'll hear a presentation on Senate Bill 74, go through a sectional if that's the will of the committee. And then lastly, we'll do the presentation on Senate Bill 75, the audiologist, speech language pathologists. Both bills again today allow Alaska to join the respective interstate licensure compacts. And again, they have similar structure. There will be again, presenting these together jointly to avoid some of the repetition and hopefully make the best use of the committee's time today. The Interstate Compact is a compact, again, between two or more states. It carries the force of statutory law and allows these states to perform a certain action and observe certain standards and cooperate in a critical policy area. By promoting cooperation and actions among states, interstate compacts increase access to quality and care by decreasing the burdensome licensure requirements that maintain rigorous licensure standards and state sovereignty. These two state compacts are very different than the state compact you may have been hearing earlier in this building, that's being talked upon in this building. And again, we're writing this piece of legislation to help address, one, the shortage of workforce, to help streamline licensing issues that our state is facing, to advance some of the telehealth options that will help increase access to more providers nationwide that may not be able to practice within our state, and to allow, and some of our invited testifiers will be able to go into a little bit more detail upon why this bill is needed and some of the shortage areas in our state. But I think you can call any school district within the state of Alaska and they'll be more than happy to talk about some of the shortages they have with trying to find speech pathologists and audiologists to help provide services to their students in their district. Both of these compacts use a privilege to model practice, which is different than that other compact. The person obtains their license in their home state. Obviously, their home state is their state of residence. The licensee can use their home state license to apply for a practice to privilege in another member state. When a person is practicing in that remote state, they are subject to those remote state laws, including that scope of practice. A remote state can take action to revoke a person's privilege to practice in that state, and then that will also be notified across all those all the other states' privileges as well. The physical therapy compact became official in 2017 and has been adopted by 34 states. And the audiologist compact became official in 2019 and has been adopted by 23 states. And then just to roughly go through some highlights of items here in the binder to note. On your first tab and tab 3, there's a wonderful purple map that has a wonderful idea of some of the state compacts that we're going through. And also, compacts aren't a new concept to our states. We have many compacts that the state of Alaska has already entered into. For example, all 50 states have a DMV compact, so it allows you to have those license privileges to drive in all 50 states and other areas as well in the U.S. On the following page, talks upon some of the other state and U.S. territory membership and interstate compacts. It's very colorful, and the purple and I guess we'll call it dark maroon colors are the two compacts. And this was as of May of 22, so this number hasn't been updated because now there are 34, and the physical compact and the 23 and the audiology compact as well. Going to tab 4 in that same section gives an overview of some of the physical therapy compact items and some of the differences in some of the other compacts that have been talked upon about in this building, that talks about some of the privileges and basically some of the basic overview of how a compact works. And we'll go into a little bit more detail in that with our invited testifiers. And the same thing later on for the audiology section as well in section 4. That talks a little bit about their scope and practices of requirements as well. Before we'll move on to our first invited testifier, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to take a brief introduction of CSG and the National Center of State Compacts. There's a lot of information, again, that's provided both to you and the committee that our testifiers will go over. But CSG, again, is our Council of State Governments. It's a nonpartisan organization, which is pretty much like our trade association for state legislators. And the Department of Defense, also known as DOD, has partnered with CSG as a cooperative agreement to help fund and support the development of new state interstate compacts for occupational licensure. The National Center of Interstate Compacts is also housed within the Council of State Governments. That's why you see a lot of this material from CSG, because that's where it's been funded and housed in. And they allow the states to, again, cooperate on these complex policy issues, strengthen economies, and protect public health and safety, and champion state sovereignty. And that's one of the issues here, is that, you know, the federal government does have ability to mandate state compacts and compacting, but this is a way that we can sort of avoid some of the state's rights and sovereignty as well. And Mr. Chair, with that, if it's your will, we would like to move into our first invited testifier, Daniel Lodsden, the director of the National Center of State Interstate Compacts. And I think he has a few minutes that he would like to go into before we go into Senate Bill 74.
Very well, Senator Wilson. Before we do that, are there any questions for Senator Wilson to clarify? Excellent. Mr. Lodsden, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Lodsden. I'm the director of the National Center for Interstate Compacts at the Council of State Governments.
Most excellent. Please begin.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me today. Got a brief overview of interstate compacts, and then I'll be happy to try to answer any questions that the members may have. So, interstate compacts, very simply, these are agreements between and among states. They're legislatively enacted. They're essentially contracts that states enter into with each other. They've proven to be, you know, very simple, versatile tools for states. Probably the best example was mentioned earlier is the driver's license compact. So, you know, the states came together, worked that all out among themselves, and that's why you can, you know, drive among the states and not have to stop at the border and get permission to do that. These are proven, again, to be effective means for states to cooperatively address common problems. It allows states to respond to national priorities with one voice, and states through the compacts are able to retain, you know, their collective state sovereignty over issues that are typically in our federalist system left to states. There are currently today 265 active interstate compacts. On average, states belong to about two dozen. The benefits, again, you know, states get to come together and provide, you know, flexible solutions that are state-driven. Most of the time when the federal government, when Congress gives us a solution, one size fits all. You know, they can't possibly account for the vagaries among the states or their different situations, but if the states are around the table, they can typically account for those, and it leads to a win-win situation for the states where they get to retain their sovereignty over issues, again, in our federal system, and adopt those solutions and chart a path forward. I've got some examples of some national compacts and some other compacts that states belong to where they've done that exact same thing. So the primary use of these, you know, interstate compacts have been around since the founding of the Republic. Up until the 20th century, they were mostly used to resolve boundary issues, to establish boundaries, and then, you know, provide access to natural resources like rivers or those types of things. In the 20th century, states began using them for administrative functions, and again, to sort of put a check on the federal government as far as retaining control of issues that are specifically left to states. So some of those examples are, you know, crime control and correction. So there's an interstate compact for adult offender supervision and the interstate compact for juveniles. Child welfare, there's the interstate compact for the placement of children. Education, there's a military children's compact commission that deals with kids moving from station to station to state while their families are in the military and them getting the proper credit for that, awarded by the school district. There's mutual aid compacts, emergency management assistance compacts. All those are national compacts that every state belongs to, And then, you know, another compact that deals with insurance product regulation is the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Compact. Alaska is a member of that. I believe it's at 47 states. There are also a number of these occupational licensure compacts. I'm not going to spend too much time on the occupational licensure compacts because you've got two on the agenda. But currently, out to the states, it's a rather long list. There's the compact for nurses, physicians, physical therapy, psychologists, EMS personnel, audiology and speech language pathologists, occupational therapists, counselors, advanced practice nurses, and then under the DOD cooperative agreement, which was mentioned earlier, we've just finished compacts for cosmetology, dentists and dental hygienists, massage therapists, social work, teachers compact, and then we're working on a compact for school psychologists and dietitians currently. These differ from a number of other agreements that states have with each other. The thing about interstate compacts is they're binding. They have to be legislatively enacted. They have to be signed into law by the governor or allowed to become law by the governor. They're embedded in statute. This is different between, you know, a memorandum of understanding between the states or uniform laws. Uniform laws obviously start out as uniform laws, but as the states begin enacting them, they become less uniform as states, again, use them, the parts they like, and disregard the parts, frankly, that they don't care much for. So with that, I think I'm going to stop because I wanted to leave a lot of time for questions. I promised Jasmine I would do that. If there's different areas about compacts that the committee would like to ask questions about, again, I'll do my best to answer those.
Thank you, Mr. Logsdon. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Dunbar.
It's not so much a question, but just thank you, sir, for your presentation. One compact you might want to add on here is the Electronic Registration Information Center, or ERIC, which prevents voter fraud, and we are a part of, and it's how you know if you're registered in one state and not another. And another successful example of a compact being used in our country. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Quite a compact list for sure.
There you go.
Do you have other testifiers, Senator Wilson?
Mr. Chair, if I believe at this time we prefer to go into the sort of sexual analysis of Senate Bill 74 before we go into the other invited testifiers.
Most excellent. Ms. Martin.
For the record, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. Yeah, so we'll dive into the sectional analysis for Senate Bill 74, if we could. And then after that, we can move to the invited testimony we have for Senate Bill 74, sectional analysis for Senate Bill 75, invited testimony for Senate Bill 75, if that works for the committee. So Senate Bill 74 is the Physical Therapist Compact Bill. Section 1 of Senate Bill 74 adds implementation of the Interstate Physical Therapy Licensure Compact to the list of duties of the State Physical Therapy and Occupational Therapy Board. And then Section 2 and 3 adds a fingerprint requirement for physical therapist assistants, occupational therapists, and occupational therapy assistants. You'll note that this is not an occupational therapy compact piece of legislation. That piece is added in there to keep the statutes between the two, keep the continuity between the statutes between the two. And then if the occupational therapists do decide that they want to work on the occupational therapy compact, that language is already in place for them and there's not a mismatch between those two pieces of law. Section 4 adds fees for compact privileges to the list of fees the department may charge. Section 5 adds a privilege to practice to the list of exceptions under which someone not licensed in the state may practice physical therapy. So a privilege to practice, as we noted under this model, is not a full license in our state. If someone was practicing under a privilege to practice here, they'd be practicing in what's called a remote state. And then Section 6 is a very, very long section. This is the compact piece of the bill. It is the bulk of the legislation. It is the actual contract that the state is agreeing to here. And so the first piece just has an introduction to the compact language. Compact Section 1 defines the purpose of the Interstate Physical Therapy Licensure Compact. Compact Section 2 has all the definitions for the compact. Compact Section 3 explains the requirements a state must meet to participate in the agreement. Compact Section 4 explains the requirements for obtaining a privilege to practice. Compact Section 5 is this active duty military spouse piece. Explains what counts as a home state for an active duty military member and for these spouses. These compacts were originally designed in coordination with the Department of Defense with an eye for making transitions for military families easier. Obviously, it has been expanded to the point that if it's a good idea and it works well for everyone in the profession. Compact Section 6 is the adverse action piece. This section explains how the compact home and remote states will conduct and report adverse actions, as well as the consequences for a physical therapist or physical therapist assistants who receives an adverse action. Compact Section 7 is the establishment of the Physical Therapy Compact Commission. This section lays out parameters for the Physical Therapy Compact Commission. Compact Section 8, this is the data system section. And just to note, this section here is the same section as Section 9, or the same language as Section 9 in the Audiologist and Speech Language Pathologist Compact. And this section lays out the requirements for sharing licensee information across all member states. It requires a compact state to submit to a uniform data set to the coordinated database and all PTC on all PTC physical therapists and physical therapist assistant to whom the compact is applicable and is as required by rules of the commission. This database allows for the expedited sharing of adverse actions against physical therapists and physical therapy assistants. The coordinated database information will be expunged by the law of the reporting compact state. Compact Section 9. This section describes the process for creating rules that will govern compact operations once the compact is accepted by the first 10 states, which both compacts have been. Compact Section 10. This section details the oversight and enforcement of the compact by member states. And then Compact Section 11 is the date of implementation of the Interstate Commission for Physical Therapy Practice and Associated Rules, Withdrawal and Amendments. This section details when the compacts and when the rules become effective. And then this language is the same, swapping out for audiologist to speech language pathologist language, but it's the same as Section 12 as ASLP IC. Section 12, this section states that the compact shall be liberally construed to effectuate the purpose thereof. If this compact is contrary to the constitution of any state member, the compact shall remain in full force and effect in the remaining compact states where there is no conflict. This language it's a bit of legalese. It's the same section that's in Section 13 of the ASLP IC. So this is the conclusion of the compact language in this bill. And then Section 7 of the legislation amends AS-12, our Code of Criminal Procedures. It adds physical therapists and physical therapist assistants, occupational therapists and occupational therapy assistants to the list of fingerprints that can be submitted to the FBI for a national criminal history check. Section 8 is an uncodified law piece. It sets transitional language for the department on these criminal background checks, and Section 9 is an effective date of July 1st, 2024. And that concludes the section on Senate Bill 74.
Thank you, Ms. Martin, for that compact sectional. Are there questions? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading the language here now, Section 7, and going further about the fingerprints and the national background check. Does that imply that at present they don't have that requirement here in Alaska to become a physical therapist? Or is this something about they do have the requirement here, but they need to be able to communicate with the National Compact Organization?
For the record, through the chair to Senator Dunbar, this is Jasmine Martin. That is not a requirement right now.
Interesting. And, okay. think about that for a little bit. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Further questions?
Well, actually, I do have a question about that, Ben.
Absolutely.
So, Ms. Martin, or for the bill sponsor, I assume that you've been working closely with the PT organizations about this. Does their membership realize that this sort of additional requirement is about to be imposed on them? I mean, a criminal background check is not nothing, and getting fingerprinted and that kind of thing is also not something people enjoy usually. So, you know, what is the feeling about the PT community about this new requirement?
For the record, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson, through the chair to Senator Dunbar, yes, we have been working closely with them. There are next invited testifiers. Actually, there'll be some of our invited testifiers here. Our intention with the legislation is to not require necessarily everyone, every physical therapist in the state, and this is going to be the same for the audiologists. You're going to see the same language. It is not the intention for all of them to go through this criminal background check, only people that want to be eligible for a compact privilege.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. So I want to make note, also in the room available for questions from CBPL is Glenn Savior. Glenn, thank you for being here. If at any point in time anyone would like to ask a question to our state agency in charge of licensing, she is available. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Senator David Wilson. I think at this point in time, if it's the will of the committee, we would like to move through some of our invited testifiers for Senate Bill 74.
Most excellent. Up first, Jeff Rosa and Leslie Adrian from the Federation of State Boards of Physical Therapy. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
And members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Jeff Rosa, and I am the Compact Administrator for the Physical Therapy Compact Commission, in addition to my role with the Federation of State Boards of Physical Therapy. And I want to thank you for considering Senate Bill 74. And when I'm done with my testimony, I'll be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have about the Physical Therapy Compact. As has been stated by Senator Wilson and Dan Lobsdin, the purpose of the compact is to facilitate the interstate practice of physical therapy with the goal of improving access to physical therapy services while enhancing public protections. So the compact is an alternate way for physical therapy providers who meet the eligibility requirements to obtain the privilege to practice in other states within a matter of minutes through the Compact Commission website. One of the nice benefits about the PT compact that when we drafted the language back in 2014 and 2015 is we wanted to make sure that member states had the ability to charge a fee for people that were purchasing a compact privilege within their state, so that we knew that there would be lost revenue from people no longer needing to submit endorsement applications, but this way the state has the ability to get revenue through the purchase of compact privileges for the states. So there's many benefits for Alaska licensed PTs and PTAs in Alaska and the citizens, including the process is much faster and efficient than the traditional licensure process, which allows for improved access and choice of PT providers for everyone, especially people that are living in underserved areas. The process also preserves the state-based licensure system while providing an alternate mechanism for PTs and PTAs to obtain the legal authority to practice in Alaska. And also the compact improves public protections by requiring the full participation by member states in the central licensure and disciplinary database, including a requirement of regular reporting of disciplinary actions to the centralized data system. And then importantly, as home to 9 military installations, the compact also greatly supports military families since it greatly improves portability for military spouses by improving the speed and ease in obtaining the ability to practice physical therapy when stationed in Alaska, and for those military families that call Alaska home but may be stationed in other states across the country. The compact is widely supported by physical therapists and physical therapist assistants, including those who live and practice in Alaska. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and welcome any questions the committee may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rosa. Is there any questions for Mr. Rosa? Thank you very much for your time today. Up next, we have Alec Kay and Leanne Carruthers, Alaska Physical Therapy Association. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Alec Kay, and I am with the state chapter of the American Physical Therapy Association. I live in Anchorage.
Please begin your testimony.
Thank you very much, Chairman Bjorkman and members of the committee. I am speaking in support of SB 74 on behalf of the Alaska chapter, the American Physical Therapy Association. We have been educating and consulting with our members for the last 3 years or so on this concept, and I can say that we now have the support of the membership. The few questions that we've had have been addressed just with education, and through the chair to Senator Dunbar, there have been no concerns regarding the additional security clearance that's part of this and the FBI background check, so that has not been one of the concerns. And I think this is something that is really important for Alaska at this time. We have a significant shortage in workforce, as you know, sort of across the board in the state, and physical therapy is no exception, and there's a shortage nationally as well. And so in order to decrease the administrative burden for applicants to come and help our community and take care of them, this would be a very, very helpful thing. And I can also speak as a private practice owner on the challenges of getting new licensees licensed and the delays that it takes and how it affects our ability to take care of our community and economically as well. So I am in support, and the members, we have about 450 in the state, are supporting this as well. And I will be happy to take questions and also yield to Leanne Carruthers.
Any questions for Mr. K? Mr. Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if this is preempting some testimony by Ms. Carruthers, I apologize. But is there, you know, that this bill, in theory, this compact would facilitate practice between by PT providers in any state that's part of the practice, part of the compact, sorry. Is there any concern in your organization that this will accelerate out-migration or even just practicing in other states by Alaskan providers? That is, you mentioned there's a nationwide shortage. So why do we think we will be a net recipient of providers as opposed to a net exporter?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, that's a good question, and it has come up. And frankly, there's no way to measure, you know, which direction things will flow. I can just speak for the frustration of people trying to get licensed in Alaska. I've gotten unsolicited letters from potential licensees who've said, you know, I can work in states that are part of the compact so much easier, and you know, the system and the process in Alaska is antiquated enough and burdensome enough that I'm not really considering it. And this is both in recruiting employees and also just as the chapter president getting unsolicited sort of complaints. And so I can just speak that, you know, there's a lot of people interested in making it easier to come here. I believe our state has a lot to offer, you know, not just because of our state, but economically, it's a good place to practice physical therapy. And I think that, I mean, I just believe without having any data that it would benefit us. And there's nothing keeping physical therapists from going to another state at this time. If they wanted to, as we've all said, it just makes it easier. Maybe one of the subject experts can speak to this in terms of data, but that's my understanding of this, and thank you for your question.
Thank you, Mr. K. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There are no further questions for Mr. K. We'll move on to Ms. Leanne Carruthers. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Leanne Carruthers. I am the current government affairs liaison for the Alaska Physical Therapy Association and the immediate past president. Senator Bjorkman, thank you for hearing this bill today and giving us an opportunity to weigh in. My day job is that I am the assistant dean in the School of Allied Health at UAA, which represents about 20 or 21 different healthcare providers in the state. And I can speak to the fact that my main job is to help decrease workforce shortages throughout Alaska, but that also gives me sort of a bird's eye view to be able to see the obstacles my graduates face to being able to be licensed in Alaska once they graduate. I am aware of at least a several month wait from the time students graduate and are eligible for licensure until their licenses are able to be processed by the licensing board. And so, you know, the licensing boards tend to be relatively short staffed. And so the process can take lots and lots of time to be able to get that done. And so I believe that decreasing the administrative burden and getting people licensed in Alaska will help for both people that live here as well as people that are applying for a privilege to practice and be able to get our healthcare providers from the point of application to seeing patients much more rapidly. Senator Dunbar, through the chair, to answer your question about out-migration, I will tell you that in order to participate in the in the PT licensing compact, people need to maintain their license in their home state. And so the privilege to practice would be an additional license in that they wouldn't lose or stop their license in Alaska in order to participate in the practice, but it would be not an either or, but a both. So I'm happy to entertain any questions that you've got, and thank you for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leanne. Are there any questions for Ms. Carruthers? Up next, we have Dr. Rebecca Byerly, physical therapist from Soldotna. Dr. Byerly, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Rebecca Byerly, physical therapist, Soldotna, Alaska.
Please begin.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bjorkman, and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, thank you so much. I am Rebecca Byerly and have been a physical therapist in our great state for 27 years. As a department director down on the Kenai Peninsula and also in private practice, and I have seen the challenges of recruiting therapists to come and work in our facilities. One can peruse our computers, the internet, and see that we have challenges in recruiting from across the state, whether it's hospitals, long-term care, skilled care, our outpatient facilities from the north to the south to the east to the west, we have a need for additional therapists. The time considerations, the application processes, the expenses to the employers limits individuals who who may opt to not come to Alaska. So the compact gives us that opportunity where therapists applying may have reduced wait times to become licensed to practice in our state. There's subsequently going to be decreased cost to the employers, such that an individual may apply and wait to get licensed while they're still getting paid but not able to practice. It's a complicated process as it is currently. On a side note, as a practicing physical therapist, we have increased need in taking care of our patient populations across the state and have vulnerable patient populations with multiple comorbidities, cardiovascular, diabetes, ortho, neuro, vestibular, you know, there's so many. And when we don't have the staffing to fulfill the needs for what our patient populations need for their care, it creates additional medical compromise. And so the compact will make it that much easier for therapists to come to Alaska to help us in providing the care to our patient populations. The other is, and appreciate the questions from Senator Dunbar with regards to the licensing, the privilege to practice, and then also the security. And that's a huge plus. And that just indicates that we'll continue to have our statutes, our regulations followed with this compact. But in addition, that background check is one more benefit, and that is just stronger security. So that is my reasoning for the support of this Senate Bill 74. And thank you very much for allowing us to come and testify today. Thank you. And I'll address any questions you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Byerly. Are there any questions? I have one question. Dr. Byerly, about how many openings are there for physical therapists on the Central Kenai Peninsula?
On the Kenai, through the chair, Senator. Currently on the Kenai Peninsula, every facility, almost every facility has at least one position open. And that's when I look at the Kenai Peninsula from the hospital to our outpatient clinics, it's probably 10, 15 across the entire from Seward down to Homer. And I also did a search this morning, and that's where I came across these numbers.
Very good. And what would you say?
The Kenai Peninsula. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for reiterating. What would you say the turnover rate is for physical therapists on the Kenai Peninsula?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator. Turnover, once they come to Alaska, they don't want to leave. We offer so much with regards to employment opportunities, education, the ability to enhance with regards to professional and their careers, but also we live in a playland, and the benefits of the outdoors and the benefits of Alaska, it is a great place, and many of our therapists stay in the state.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Wilson, did you have other invited testifiers for Senate Bill 74?
Not at this time, Mr. Chair. I think everyone else is there for public testimony.
Very well. At this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 74. Is there anyone here in the room that would like to testify to Senate Bill 74? Seeing and hearing no one, is there anyone from the LIO that would like to testify? Very good. First up, Kelly Michelle Chick, physical therapist, Ketchikan. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, hi. Kelly Michelle Chick, and I'm from Ketchikan, Alaska. Yeah, and sorry, I thought I was one of the invited. Am I on the public testimony portion?
Yes, you're invited now.
Okay, perfect. That's perfect.
Please begin.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a physical therapist here in Ketchikan. I came up originally in the 90s as a traveling physical therapist, and I stayed. I was one of the ones that, you know, that was being referred to that, you know, came up and didn't want to leave. I've been in private practice for 20 years. I'm owner of a business down here, and we've employed up to 7 physical therapists at one time. It's taken a big hit through, you know, the COVID and some of the changes in the national healthcare scene. But historically, I've always been able to track the same things that everyone else has already given testimony on around recruitment and some of the licensure issues. They seem to be even more delays and administrative burden in the last really, you know, 2 years. Than anything I've ever seen, you know, up until this point. So I just stand, you know, really in agreement with the prior testimony that's been given on those aspects of the, you know, the state of the industry, if you will, and the processes that we have in place. So I have no disagreement with any of that. The one piece I thought maybe I could add has to do with, you know, we have no physical therapist school. We have the PTA school in Anchorage at UAA, but we don't have PT schools in Alaska. And so everybody that comes here to practice, like many other professions, you know, gets their education south. And if we have any additional education to get continuing ed, then we also have to go back south to get it. I have a unique situation. I'm in an EMG residency program because in Ketchikan, there's never been anybody here permanent providing that. And physical therapists now have the ability to train in these advanced kind of certifications. And I have a need to go get mentorship and do some temporary travel down for weeks at a time, you know, to go be in other clinics and get mentorship because you have to produce so many tests, even sit for the exam. And the PT Compact for me, you know, just even as a physical therapist, trying to bring something back into the community would be an amazing opportunity option for me if I could have a compact licensure, because it would open up my ability to go get my mentoring in other state and then bring it back, which is ultimately my goal, is to provide that service here for the community in Ketchikan. So, you know, kind of a little bit of a flip of kind of what was some of the prior questions that were asked about us leaving. You know, sometimes we have to go get something to bring it back. So that's really all I had to add, but I'm in agreement with the licensing, you know, the workforce shortages and the streamlining the licensing process, because I've experienced the same thing as a business owner with delays and economic challenges of getting people in a reasonable period of time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, ma'am. And I apologize. Was it Miss Michelle? Miss Kelly?
Michelle Chick, yeah.
Oh, okay. Apologies. So you said that there aren't really educational opportunities for physical therapists in Alaska. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? Are you saying there's no degree program at the University of Alaska, or is it there's no residency opportunities? Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, there's the training program I'm in doesn't have a mentor available in Alaska for the training that I have. So you're talking continuing ed primarily. Once you're out of school and you've got your DPT degree, then you move on to continuing ed or some additional certifications. A lot of that can be done online, but the in-person portions are largely done in the lower 48, because that's where the access is. That's where, you know, most of the expertise is residing, if you will. Leanne might be able to comment more about the educational efforts in Alaska for therapy programs, because she's directing right now the physical therapist assistant program in Anchorage.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Chick, for your testimony. Next up, we have David Jamison. Mr. Jamison, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, I'm David Jamison, and I was actually going to do testimony for SB 75.
Okay, very well. We will take you up later, Mr. Jamison.
Thank you.
Rafferty's. Back on the record. Next up for public testimony on Senate Bill 74, Melissa Bunzelmeyer. Melissa, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Hi, my name is Melissa Bunzelmeyer. I'm a physical therapist from North Pole, Alaska. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Please begin.
I'm speaking in support of SB 74. I grew up in Alaska, and after completing my schooling, made it back to the great state, and I've always worked in rural settings, and now I'm the clinical manager at North Pole Physical Therapy. I will just add my agreement into what has already been said, and that the administrative burden of potential state Alaska licensees is really hurting our delivery of health care by limiting our services. We cannot effectively take care of our community. We have more patients in the North Pole community than we can see because of the labor shortage. Here's my current frustration. We hired physical therapist Lewis Haas, and he started his license application in January, and he's still without his license, and he's scheduled to start work next week. We can't start his contract without a license, and we do have people waiting to see him. With the PT compact, this would not be a problem. This is just a current example, but it does happen on a regular basis. In fact, we've interviewed contract therapists who have declined a position here specifically because we are not part of the compact state. Another struggle is we can't start credentialing for TRICARE until we have his license. TRICARE credentialing takes up to 120 days, and in our area, we have a huge military clientele with dependents, veterans, and active duty. So this just compounds the delay from the point of hiring a therapist to getting them actually able to provide care. There are many challenges to staffing a rural clinic in Alaska, and allowing Alaska to join the PT licensing compact would help alleviate a great deal of this challenge. So thank you for your time and consideration.
Ms. Bunzelmeyer, thank you very much for your testimony. Are there questions for Ms. Bunzelmeyer? Very good. Seeing and hearing no one else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 74, we will hold public testimony open and we will set this bill aside. Briefities. back on the record. Next up, we will take up Senate Bill 75. Here to present the bill, we have bill sponsor, Senator David Wilson. We appreciate you already being at the table, Mr. Wilson. Please proceed with your introduction of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Senator David Wilson, Senator for District N, and with me is Ms. Jasmine Martin, a staff in my office, wonderful staffer to our office. Mr. Chair, the presentation is very similar to the presentation we just gave for Senate Bill 74. So with that, I will just say the audiologist is probably a profession that is probably more in need of qualified audiologists within the state of Alaska. They're both in, workforce shortages is an issue among many professions, but having a speech pathologist is crucial for our young souls that we have in our state of Alaska. And with that being the future, if we can deal with issues much younger on in the state of Alaska, I think Medicaid data show that most Medicaid recipients are between the ages of 0 to 24. And if we can deal with complex issues before they become chronic care issues, then it's a less burden to the state of Alaska in terms of cost and a better quality of life for those individuals. And having these entities, both PT, but mostly for speech language audiologists, would be crucial to have in our state. And with that, I can pass this over to Ms. Jasmine Martin to go over a sectional, if that's the will of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Martin.
Great. For the record, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. Again, Senate Bill 75 allows Alaska to join the Audiologist and Speech Language Pathologist Interstate Compact. Section 1 and 2 of this legislation again deal with the criminal background check and the fingerprint requirement. Section 3 allows the department to charge fees for a compact privilege. Section 4 allows someone who has a compact privilege to practice in Alaska. And then Section 5 is, again, the compact piece of this legislation. This is the section that contains uniform language adopted by all states that are entering the compact. Compact Section 1 is the purpose section again. Compact Section 2 is the definition section. Compact Section 3 lays out the requirements the states must meet to join the compact. It provides, to provide services allowed by this compact, the professional must hold a home state license in the compact state. Compact Section 4 explains the licensing requirements the state must meet to participate in the agreement. Compact Section 5 requires that the jurisdiction accepting this compact allow for the practice of telehealth, which Alaska does. Compact 6 is, again, this active duty military personnel piece. These compacts, again, were originally designed with making transitions for military families easier. This is a piece specifically spelling out what their home state is, etc. Compact Section 7 explains how the compact home and remote states will conduct and report adverse actions, as well as the consequences for an audiologist or speech-language pathologist who receives adverse actions. Compact Section 8 establishes the ruling commission of the compact. And again, this compact is not a waiver of sovereign immunity. Compact Section 9 is the same as Compact Section 8 for the physical therapist compact. This section denotes the requirement for the sharing of license information for all compact states. Again, the same as Section 8 for the physical therapist compact. Compact Section 10 describes the process for creating rules that will govern compact operations once the compact is accepted by 10 states, which it has been. Compact Section 11 details the oversight and enforcement of the compact by member states. Compact Section 12 details when the compact and its rules become effective. It is the same as Section 11 of the Physical Therapist Compact. Compact Section 13 is the same as Section 12 of the Physical Therapist Compact. This section states that the compact shall be liberally construed so as to effectuate the purpose thereof. If this compact shall be held contrary to the Constitution of any state member, the compact shall remain in full force for the other remaining states where there is no conflict. And then Compact Section 14 states that this compact shall be binding upon all member states. And that's the end of the compact language. Section 6 amends the Code of Criminal Procedure to add audiologists and speech-language pathologists to their lists of fingerprints. Section 7 is transition language regarding the fingerprints, and Section 8 is an effective date of July 1st, 2024.
Thank you very much for that compact sectional. Any questions? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I suppose I should have asked this about the physical therapists as well, particularly for audiologists. What is the thinking behind requiring a background check and fingerprints? That is to say, you know, they don't have prescribing authority. There are many professions in our life where even, you know, you have access to relatively sensitive data, or you work with sensitive populations and still don't have to actually have a criminal background check. Why do we think we need one for all audiologists?
For the record, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. I'm sure someone from the national organization can elaborate a little bit further. But this legislation is allowing people to more quickly move and practice between state lines, right? And so putting in a requirement where you can do further background checks because they haven't necessarily been practicing in your state for the length of their license is going to allow states to be more assured that they are getting quality, safe people coming in and practicing.
And for the record, this is Senator David Wilson. Very similar to when Alaska instituted some of the Medicaid barrier crimes laws, other states have optional services on which professions and which billable services also require the federal background check. And I'm sure others, some of the states that are practicing within the compact also have those same statutes within there. So just uniformly item across all against most of those states so that we are up to that sort of highest level of qualifications for that state to be able to practice within those compacts.
Brief follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
I think that's a good point. I think from both of you, I appreciate that answer. And the issue of barrier crimes is an interesting one. Really problematic in a lot of cases. It makes people, they can't practice any profession and they have no options after they've, you know, fulfilled their debt to society. So imagine we don't have that barrier crime, or let's say Oregon doesn't have that barrier crime and they're in the compact, but New York does. Is it uniform then? Is it you are prevented from practicing in Oregon because New York has this barrier crime? Or is it just we're going to sort of do this background check and then apply our laws, not some kind of uniform barrier crime spread across the compact?
For the record, this is Senator David Wilson through the chair, Senator Dunbar. And I may have just used a bad example for that of just saying similar to having the additional background checks as part of that. It would be a federal crime and making sure that you just register as part of that check as a background check. And so as long as, and I believe, I'm trying to think of the person's name. Mr. Jamison might be able to be the best one to speak to that, Mr. Chair, in terms of some of the qualifications in terms of the federal background checks and what would be barred from an audiologist to be able to practice in compact states.
I think I would actually probably ask Ms. Nancy Levering to ask this question first.
Very, very good.
But yep. In terms of giving specific examples to why a background check would be necessary for speech pathology in the populations we work with, we have to consider that most of the people receiving speech pathology services have some sort of communicative impact. Now, oftentimes, these are our more vulnerable populations that can't advocate for themselves or function and communicate. So we want to be sure that the people coming in and doing these jobs, we want to lower that threshold of risk for any, you know, adverse effects from populations working that shouldn't be.
Thank you, Mr. Jamison. And for folks online, if you could just wait until I call on you, and then we'll get your name on the record before you speak or answer any questions. That way we can direct traffic for the recording secretary and everyone to make sure we get everything down on the record as it should be. But thank you, Mr. Jamison, for that answer. I appreciate that. Next, we'll go to invited testimony. Next up, Nahale Kalfas. Ms. Kalfas, please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you so much. This is Nahale Kalfas, and thank you to the chair and to members of the committee. and specifically to our sponsor, Senator Wilson. I'm happy to be here. I am the general counsel for the ASLP-ICC, which is the acronym for the Interstate Compact Commission that governs this compact. We are currently in 23 states, soon to be 24, introduced in between 13 and 14. I can't recall if we moved to 14 today. I am a co-primary drafter of this piece of legislation. Just for your information, I'm also legal counsel with the Council of State Governments, so I help in drafting other compacts. I specifically also represent occupational therapy and the counseling compact. So I'm happy to be able to speak to you today about this. I don't want to waste any of your time, so I'll go straight to the previous question, if that's acceptable from the chair and for the senator who asked the question. I'd just like to share that with regard to the criminal background check, you know, aside from the fact that the majority of the public, at least anecdotally, we're trying to gather some information, but at least anecdotally, the majority of the public assumes that people who come into their homes, for instance, to provide speech-language pathology to their children or other vulnerable populations, you know, people with differences and with certain challenges, I think that there is an assumption that there's been some sort of background check. I'd like to make it very clear, though, however, the language of this compact specifically does not dictate the terms of the criteria by which a previous criminal conviction would keep you from the compact. That is left to the member states to determine. So there is no outright ban with regard to a particular crime, and that's because we believe that we should trust in our fellow member states to determine whether or not there's a nexus between the crime and the ability to competently practice the profession. So that is left to the state. I thought it was a good question to ask whether or not you would be precluded from participation based on another state's discretionary determination. And that would only be true if it was your home state, because your home state license is what gives you the what punches your ticket to be able to participate with the privilege to practice in every other state in which you choose to practice. So if you lose your home state member state license, then yes, you do lose your ability to practice under a privilege unless you move to another home state and requalify with application. But again, that is a state sovereignty issue for us. I mean, these are creatures of federalism, so we leave that determination to the state. There is an enhanced level of trust here with this interstate travel, with the ability to practice beyond borders. So there is a greater level of requirement for public protection. Obviously, these are creatures of public protection, just like your state licensing boards in Alaska. So it is important and incumbent upon all of us to protect our sister states, wherein we're allowing folks to practice across borders via telehealth, which we deem just another modality of practice that requires you to abide the same ethical and practice standards to adhere to. So it's important to us that we make sure that we do have a level of practitioner who is properly vetted, who is someone who it makes sense to allow them to have this sort of license reportability. That doesn't mean that a person who might not qualify otherwise can't get a single state license. Of course they can. This only speaks to the compact, and the compact is but another pathway for licensure. It doesn't preclude or subsume any sort of reciprocity or uniform licensure. It's just another pathway to licensure, but with its own set of criteria, which I think the other witnesses have spoken very well to the fact that these compacts are contractual creatures. So each state agrees not to act unilaterally, but each state's scope of practice is preserved and respected, and the terms of the compact are what the states agree with each other to uphold, so that you don't have one state doing something that another state has agreed to in this compact, which is also a contract, has agreed to do. I want to be respectful of the committee's time. I have a lot of answers that I think can help in terms of operations of the Compact Commission, so I will just leave the time for any questions you may have. Thank you.
You're welcome. Are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, Ms. Kalfas, thank you very much for being here today. Up next, with invited testimony, Nancy Lovering, Alaska Speech and Hearing Association. Ms. Lovering, please.
Good afternoon.
State your name and affiliation for the record.
Hi, my name is Nancy Lovering. I am representing Alaska Speech and Hearing Association, in addition to myself, who is a private practice owner in Anchorage.
Please begin.
I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee for allowing me to provide the support for SB 75. I'm here to testify that for ACSHA, Alaska Speech and Hearing Association, and myself, and Alaska Speech and Hearing has provided members with opportunity for education and input regarding the compact. And I'm here to say that the members of Alaska Speech and Hearing are supportive of this interstate compact. From my personal experience as a small business owner who works with children with disabilities in Anchorage, I wanted to address the idea of military families who were relocated during the times during COVID and were moved to other states, and wanted to continue with the kind of therapeutic relationship I had with their children. So because we were in that time of teletherapy, I was able to continue to see those children in other states. The problem maybe for me as a small business owner is, without the contact that we are hoping to get, I was required to license in multiple states to serve those children who had moved. And so it was something I was willing to do and happy to do because I wanted to help these families out. But at the same time, it was a big expense for me as a small business owner. And the other point I want to make, because I think I just want to reiterate what we've already heard with both the physical therapy compact and what we've heard so far regarding our compact here, is that we're all in agreement with the issues that we're having as far as retaining and finding qualified therapists who are willing to stay through the licensure process. One thing to note is that Alaska does not have a licensing board for speech pathology and audiology. And so when there are any kind of consumer complaints or concerns, it's typically addressed by those who kind of process the applications or work for the state licensing agency. There are several times, or many times I could say, that I've been asked as a consultant kind of type of thing for information or input regarding licensing complaints from consumers. I do my best to answer representing like the state association, but I also refer people to our national association for answers to those questions. So we would certainly appreciate and find that the support from the compact and the compact states for those who would be practicing or with the privilege to practice in our state is a benefit for consumer protection too in the state. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lovering. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Thanks again. At this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 75. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Is there anyone online, off-net, or from LIOs that would like to testify? Mr. Jameson, would you like to testify to Senate Bill 75?
Hello again, I'm David Jameson. I'm a member of ACSHA, and I own a small outpatient clinic up in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Please begin.
So I would like to just reiterate, I think at this point you've heard all of the arguments for the compact, and I don't think we need to repeat them. But again, I would like to give some specific information just about the state of the industry in the interior. And it's very similar to what you heard for the PTs as well. So talk about the private clinic that I own. It's been in operation for 20 years, and for that entire 20 years, we've had a 6 to 12 month waiting list. And so we are not practically able to serve the needs of our community right now. And that's a common occurrence for for all the school districts, the other two private practices in town, and a handful of individual providers that are working privately. And so I'm very much in support of this compact because one of the primary barriers to getting all of our new employees that we're trying to get in the state is licensing. And the process typically goes from a new hire, they get their degree, they get their license, and then they have to be credentialed by each individual insurance company before they can begin practicing. And so just like you heard before from the other private practice owners, I'm often in a situation where we'll be in an interview and I'll have to tell somebody that they will need to wait, you know, 2 to 3 months before they can actually start working. And most of the people who take these positions, they're new grads coming up from the lower 48. We do have a program here in Alaska that those new grads kind of get snapped up by wherever they do their internships. And so when we have new grads coming up, you know, moving from the lower 48 up to Alaska, they can't wait to work. They can't wait 2 or 3 months. And while, you know, streamlining the licensing process through this compact, you know, wouldn't solve all of the problems of getting people working, it would certainly, you know, lower the process from 2 to 3 months to 1 to 2 months, which would be an excellent thing for us to do. I also have experience and concerns from our military community, specifically representatives of the ESMP program, where if services are not available locally for military families with children with special needs, they'll oftentimes refuse to move that military family to stations where that infrastructure is not in place. And so we're really facing this situation where in the future, if we don't put ourselves in a situation where we can provide the infrastructure that we need for our military populations, we're going to start losing military investment to some degree. And I'd like to avoid that for our community. I think other than that, those are my primary concerns at this point. Other than that, I think everything's already kind of been stated. So if there is any questions, I'll take them now. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Jameson. Any questions from members of the committee? Very good. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 75? Hearing and seeing no one, I will hold public testimony open and we will set Senate Bill 75 aside. There will be no Labor and Commerce Committee meeting on Friday this week. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Monday, March 13th. As there is no further business to come before this committee, this meeting is adjourned at 2:51 p.m.